What up, son? It's the tale of the tapes. The fuck life. Saying? Alright, Tale of the Tapes, Season 3, Episode 2. So Season 3 is obviously officially underway, as we're a couple of weeks in now. And today we'll be covering the next two artists to come out in the new millennium, Beanie Siegel and Black Rob. So as far as my thoughts and opinions on these two artists prior to covering them in this study are concerned, I have a decent amount to say today, which sometimes isn't always the case, like last week. Beanie Siegel, I was actually a huge fan of in the early Rockefeller days, although in all fairness, I was a big fan of most of that Rockefeller roster. I do remember having Beans' debut album, and I definitely remember liking it, although I remember listening to his second and third ones with some friends. Shout out to Dirty T. But don't believe I ever owned them and wasn't personally a huge fan of his albums after the first one, although I do remember mine being the unpopular opinion in the group. But yeah, man, early on, I really thought very highly of Beanie Siegel, but I do have to admit, this was very early into my discovery of hip-hop, less than 5 years. So not only was I mostly just into mainstream artists for the most part at the time I found Beans, but Rockefeller was also one of the hottest labels at that time, so I'm sure my opinion was a bit biased whether I realized it or not. As time went on and my knowledge of hip-hop expanded, I started to wonder what the fuck I was thinking placing Beanie Siegel so high, and it's not that I disliked him or any of his work, just didn't think he was as good as I once thought he was. To be clear though, I still liked Beans as an artist. I liked a lot of his content and I loved him in the movies he was in, like Paper Soldiers and State Property and all those movies and stuff like that. So going into Beans in this study, I was a little torn because I expected to wind up doubting everything I originally thought of him. Black Rob, on the other hand, is another one who, although I wouldn't say I was a huge fan of him personally the same way I was with Beans, I also had Black Rob's debut album and I particularly liked that one even more than I did Beans' first album. But that was where it ended for me with Black Rob. I loved his first album and had absolutely no other thoughts on him whatsoever. I honestly wasn't even sure if Black Rob had any other albums after that, to be honest with you. So going into him, I really wasn't sure what to expect, but I figured between what I expected to be a small catalog and not remembering Black Rob being anything special, he wouldn't score very well here, so let's get into these artists and see if my expectations were on point at all. Both of these artists had their debut solo albums out in the year 2000, but Beanie Siegel was out first, so we'll start off with him. His birth name is Dwight Equan Grant, born March 6, 1974 in South Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, United States. Genres are listed as hip-hop, and his years active are listed as 1995 to present. So really nothing at all out of the ordinary there for Beanie Siegel, so let's just get right into his background and see if we get any additional information on him there. Dwight Equan Grant, born March 6, 1974, better known by his stage name Beanie Siegel, is an American rapper from South Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He first became known for his association with Jay-Z and Rockefeller Records, releasing his debut studio album, The Truth, through Rockefeller Records in February of 2000 to critical and commercial success. Siegel's second studio album, The Reason, saw a similar commercial success, but received mixed reviews from critics. His third album, The Becoming, was critically acclaimed and peaked at number 3 on the Billboard 200. After a short break from music, Siegel returned to Rockefeller in 2007 and released his fourth studio album, The Solution, in December of 2007 to positive reviews. After leaving Rockefeller once again, Siegel's fifth and sixth studio albums, The Broad Street Bully and This Time, were released independently in 2009 and 2012, respectively. Siegel is also known for his numerous legal issues, including a trial for attempted murder that took place between 2004 and 2005 and eventually led to Siegel's acquittal. Okay, so certainly a bit more there than we've gotten for anyone else so far in Season 3. not an overabundance of music-related things there, aside from mostly obvious stuff, but we do see him leaving, rejoining, and re-leaving Rockefeller Records, as well as public legal issues, as Beans has never seemed to be one to back down from controversy. But other than that, let's check out my breakdown on Beanie Siegel and see how that reads. When I was a teenager, Beanie Siegel was pretty high on my list. As time went on and I got more into hip-hop, I switched my stance, and although I always liked Beans, I no longer thought he was anything special. Lyrically, he was actually a bit better than I gave him credit for, especially when it came to utilizing different rhyme schemes. While he was decent with syllables, he did repeat a lot of in-between words to make it seem like more syllables were being rhymed than there actually were. Although he bodied some verses, he also had a decent amount of run-on bars and didn't rhyme at times. He was, however, pretty good at keeping a topic throughout a song and finished above average lyrically overall. Siegel registered 9 albums for scoring in total between himself and State Property, plus a collaboration album with Freeway. Of the 9, 1 was a borderline classic, 2 were great, and the other 6 were good. That's pretty consistently impressive. Of his 103 total qualified songs, 5 of them were great, none were weak, and another 43 were good. That makes just about 50% of Beans' material good or better, which is again consistently impressive. When it came to impact on the hip-hop game, there was a bit of give and take for Beanie Mac. On one hand, he was part of one of the biggest slash hottest hip-hop movements at the time in Rockefeller, but at the same time, he was never able to garner anywhere near the same type of commercial success as the person he was standing next to. On top of that, he only had clear visible influences on Cormega and possibly a few others. When it came to originality, Beanie Siegel could have possibly been one of the least original artists to date thus far in this study. Aside from his voice and rhyme style, there was almost nothing original about him aside from the fact that he always seemed to be being him. On top of all this, he took a tremendous amount of lines from Biggie, even more on average than Jay-Z took, and a whole bunch more stuff from Jay-Z himself, as well as many other artists. So from that, it sounds like Beanie Siegel may be on opposite ends of the spectrum here, depending on which category you're looking at, so let's get into the math on Beans and see where he winds up. Lyrics, he gets a 6, and like I spoke about, it's kind of weird how much I've flip-flopped with Beanie Siegel. So when I was a teenager, I probably had Beans, and again, I wasn't, you know, ranking people numerically or anything like that, but I'm just trying to make a point of what I thought. When I was a teenager, I probably had Beans more near the 8 department as far as lyrics are concerned. Then as I got older and in my 20s and even into my 30s and, you know, was really, really listening to hip-hop and stuff, and even as I started this study and I was like, man, what the fuck was I thinking when I used to always tell people that Beanie Siegel was a nasty lyricist, like? And I started to just, like, you know when you get, like, annoyed at younger versions of yourself and you're like, man, what the fuck were you saying to people? You know what I'm saying? But, you know, I went from having Beanie ranked really high to thinking Beans was average, you know, at best, let's say, to going back to studying Beans and being like, oh, Beans actually is a pretty good lyricist. So a bit of a flip-flop there as far as I was concerned. He definitely was not quite as good as I thought he was when I was younger, but he was definitely better than I gave him credit for as I got older. And again, that was mostly due to his ability to utilize different rhyme schemes. That was probably Beanie Siegel's best quality when it came to lyrics. But on top of that, like I said, he was surprisingly good at being able to hold a topic throughout an entire song. He was good at utilizing different rhyme schemes. He did have spots where he was good with syllables, but like I said, he used a lot of the same words repeated to make it seem like more syllables were rhyming than they actually were. But nonetheless, above average score of 6 there for Beanie Siegel in the lyrics department. Albums, he gets a 4.99 with 0 classics. And like I said, man, Beanie Siegel had 9 albums between himself, State Property, and the collaboration that he did with Freeway. We had the 1 borderline classic, we had 2 great albums, and the other 6 were good albums. So, you know, at a 9 albums and, you know, your worst stuff is good, Again, that's consistently impressive. So he gets a good album score there of 4.99. Songs, he gets a plus 0.49. I've spoke about this a million times. When you're getting plus or minus a full point in any category, really, but I usually speak on it in regards to this category because this is the only category where you can actually lose points. That's when it really starts to become significant. So not quite there for Beanie Siegel, but he's just about at plus a half a point. So again, not overly significant on the final score, but definitely having some sort of an impact on it at this point. And the way that he got that half a point was he had 103 songs in total, 5 great songs, no weak songs. That comes out to almost 5% of his material. You move the decimal point one spot to the left, and he gets just about plus a half a point there in the songs department. Again, much better to be getting a half a point than losing a half a point. That is a full point difference, and that does become significant. So think about that. If Beanie Siegel has 5 weak songs instead of 5 great songs, it really does start to become significant on his final score there. So Beanie Siegel gets a half a point there in the songs department, which is certainly better than getting a 0 or losing. Impact, he gets a 5.5, which is just above average. And again, you know, you had to look at a number of things here when it came to impact for Beans. So yes, he clearly had a visible influence on Cormega. There were a couple of other names there where, you know, there were some possibilities, but not surefire things where I really had to write their names down. You know, and as far as being part of Rockefeller, right? I mean, that's a two-sided coin right there, because just the fact that you were signed to Rockefeller, especially during that time period, says something in itself, right? But again, on the flip side of that, the fact that you were signed to one of the biggest, hottest hip-hop movements at the time and really were never able to garner a major amount of commercial success, especially in comparison to the person standing right next to you, hint, hint, Jay-Z, it doesn't bode well for you. But I do think that there was enough there just based on Beanie Siegel's name alone and, you know, having the 9 albums and being signed to Rockefeller for all those years and having clear influences on at least one, maybe more artists than that. I think all those things put together at least climbs Beans to a 5.5, just above average. So gets a 5.5 in the impact department there. Originality, he gets a 4, which, if I'm not mistaken, I believe that's the lowest originality score that anyone's gotten to date in this study. And like I said, man, it just came from so many things. I mean, you know, his content was so typical. His image was so typical. His slang was so typical. There were just so many things. And I'm not trying to shit on Beans here. To this day, I still like Beans. I enjoy Beans, not only Beans' music, but I just enjoy Beans as an artist. I think Beans is hilarious in some of those movies. Even when he's not trying to be funny, he just entertains me. He seems like a very loose cannon. I'm typically entertained by people like that. I don't know why I think that shit is funny, but I do. So again, I'm not trying to shit on Beans, but I have to look at it for what it is. And like I said, aside from his voice and his rhyme style, which weren't like ridiculously original, aside from those things, there really was pretty much nothing original about him. There weren't like many original song ideas, you know, all the other things I already named. So he gets a below average score of 4 in the originality department there. You add those 5 numbers up and you divide by 5. It gives you a final rating of 4.20, which puts Beanie Siegel in 127th place of 213 artists done overall. So that's definitely not a solid finish there for Beanie Siegel. And although he scored well lyrically and had some solid albums and songs, with his impact being just above average and his originality score being below average, he winds up in the back half of this list halfway through the study. But like I said, man, I've always personally been a pretty big fan of Beanie Siegel. So shout outs to Beans and the whole Rockefeller Records crew, no doubt about it. So with Beanie Siegel officially done, let's move on to our next artist in Season 3, Black Rob, who, as I stated earlier, also had his debut album out in the calendar year of 2000. His birth name is Robert Ross, also known as Rob Marciano, Robbie O, Blanco Pop, and Bacardi Rob. Born June 8, 1968 in Buffalo, New York, United States. Died April 17, 2021 in Atlanta, Georgia, United States. Genres are listed as hip-hop, and his years active are listed as 1989 to 2021. So, I've looked into this a bit, and I can't really figure out why Black Rob's years active are listed as 1989 to 2021, when he didn't release an album till the year 2000, a single till 1999, wasn't on songs with Bad Boy until 1996, and didn't even join a rap group until 1990, who had never released any albums. I see it said he began rapping around the age of 11 or 12, which would fall right around that 1989 time frame, but I'm not sure years active should be listed as far back as when you quote-unquote started rapping, writing rhymes in your room as a kid. Can we really even pinpoint one direct moment when you started rapping? When did you start rapping? Did you start rapping when you started reciting other people's rhymes? Did you start rapping the first time that you ever thought of a rhyme in your head? Did you start rapping the first time you ever wrote down a bar or two? Like, I can go on and on with this. Like, when did you technically start rapping? But nevertheless, we'll rock with what it said, but we did get some decent info there on Black Rob, so let's get into some additional background stuff and see what else we can find out. Robert Ross, June 8th, 1968 to April 17th, 2021, known professionally as Black Rob, was an American rapper who was signed to Bad Boy Records. He was best known for his 1999 single, Whoa, which peaked at number 43 on the Billboard Hot 100. He spent 4 years in prison in connection with a hotel robbery in 2004. So as has been the case with most artists covered so far up to this point in season 3, not an overabundance of background info there on Black Rob, aside from the fact that he was signed to Bad Boy Records and had a hit single in 1999, which if I had to guess is what most people probably know him by anyway. So again, not much additional information aside from the fact that he went to prison in 2004 for robbing a hotel. But I do want to just give a major rest in peace shout out to Black Rob, as we can see that he passed away less than 2 years ago, unfortunately. So again, rest in peace to Black Rob, and let's now move right into my write-up of Black Rob and see how that reads. While I'm not sure I'd go as far as to say it was one of my favorites, I did love Black Rob's debut album. Other than that, though, I knew nothing of him. Throughout the majority of his career, he was extremely inconsistent from bar to bar. He did everything from use rhyme schemes to use run-on bars and shortcuts. He was decent in spots with syllables, but also didn't rhyme at all sometimes. Ironically enough, the less popularity and success he had, the better he seemed to have actually gotten. On his last album, he was able to do some positive things more consistently, and his bars started to have more substance. On top of that, he was decent at telling stories and finished just above average lyrically overall. BR only registered 3 albums for scoring in his 11 years on the mic. Consistently enough, all 3 of those albums were good albums. Of his only 44 songs, none were great or weak, but he did have 14 good ones. While technically speaking, Black Rob wasn't necessarily a one-hit wonder, he was about as close as you can get. With only 3 albums, 44 songs, and no clear names on his list of artists influenced, it was tough to find anything else to give Black Rob credit for other than being signed to Bad Boy and having 1 or 2 popular songs. While he didn't take a massive amount from all the artists before him, he did take a decent amount, especially considering his small body of work. On top of that, there wasn't much original about his image or song content at all for the most part. So that to me sounds like one of those classic mediocre scores in each department type of write-up, so let's check out the numbers for Black Rob and see what happens here. Lyrics, he gets a 5.5. Like I spoke about, it was a little tough to gauge Black Rob, man. I mean, in just 44 songs total, this guy was all over the place. I'm pretty sure in the first fucking verse that I judged of Black Rob, he had everything from rhyme schemes, run-on bars, shortcuts, decent amount of syllables rhymed, didn't rhyme at all. you know, stuff like that, probably literally in either the first song or the first verse I heard of him. And that continued throughout. But like I said, as he got further along in his career, it was crazy to watch a shift and these two lines just cross each other in total opposite fashions. His skill level actually continued to trend up the more that his popularity trended down. And I always think that that's an interesting thing that happens here more often than not in these studies. I've found myself personally enjoying people's less technical material and maybe or maybe not more popular material. On the flip side of that, I have noticed that people's more technically impressive songs tend to be either their lesser popular ones or the ones that I personally liked less, as far as just listening is concerned. So I do always think that that dynamic of more skilled and more complicated generally resulting in less popular and less successful is a pretty interesting dynamic. So all of that winds up with Black Rob getting a just above average score of 5.5 there in the lyrics department. Albums, he gets a 4.40 with zero classics. Like I said, only 3 albums for Black Rob in an 11-year span on the mic. Again, all 3 of those albums were good albums, so he obviously gets a good album score of 4.40 there in the albums department. Songs, he gets a 0. Like I spoke about, only 44 total songs. None were great, none were weak. So he breaks even there in the songs department and gets a 0, which, again, it would be nice to gain points, right? But he's not losing them either. So Impact, he gets a 4. And I spoke about this on the last episode when covering Dead Prez, and I spoke about how, you know, their kind of name and following and acknowledgement as a somewhat underground, conscious, political hip-hop group. And, you know, they did have some success with some songs. It wasn't really the one-hit wonder type of thing as it was with Black Rob, though. Black Rob did probably have like 2 or 3 songs that were, I don't know if I would call them commercially successful so much so as I would call them popular, but really only the one majorly commercially successful song with Whoa there getting to, I believe it was number 43 on the Billboard Hot 100. Other than that, not really anything there. And again, you're looking at a very small body of work. Smaller than both members of Dead Prez. Only half the amount of material as one of the members of Dead Prez. So again, a very small body of work. A very limited amount of mainstream success. Just the one song really is all he really got. Each album probably less successful than the one prior to it, which really wasn't overly successful in itself. So again, I'm trying to point out a lot of things here. A very small number of songs. A very small catalog and albums and things like that. So it's just all these things combined with the fact that there are no names on his list of artist influence. All these things taken into consideration, I do think you get somebody here who fits the model pretty well of getting a 4. And I think it's kind of ironic how I just broke down last week kind of why people are getting the Impact scores they get, and a 4 is not a common score at all. We've probably only had a handful of 4s to date, and then right after me speaking on that, we get a 4 here, so I'm glad that I spoke about that last week. But yeah, a below average score of 4 in the Impact department here for Black Rob. And originality, he gets a 5. Like I spoke about, there wasn't much original about Black Rob, whether it was his image or his song content. Again, it wasn't like he was taking a massive amount of things from artists before him, but he did take some, and considering the fact that he has a small body of work and really didn't do nearly anything that was overly original, I thought he broke even and gets an average score of a 5 in the originality department here. So you add all those 5 numbers up and you divide by 5, which is the number of categories, and that gives you a final rating of 3.78. which puts Black Rob in 177th place of 213 artists done overall. So again, not a strong finish here today for Black Rob or Beanie Siegel, although Beans is able to best Black Rob here by exactly 50 spots, which may wind up being 100 or more by the time this is all said and done. But again, like I said earlier, Black Rob's write-up sounded like a very mediocre one, and his scores mostly reflected that. We've touched on this before, but since we've had such an extended break, I'm going to say it again. Although it may seem like mediocre scores would land you near the middle, at this point in the study, we're three seasons and almost 215 artists deep, and we've also had some astonishing finishes, so again, at this point in the study, these around-the-board scores of 4, 4.5, 5, 5.5, etc., especially if you're getting them in every category, are typically going to lean you more towards the bottom half at the very least. But nonetheless, man, major shout-outs to both Beanie Siegel and Black Rob, as well as the entire Rockefeller and Bad Boy movements, because those were both some majorly impressive ones. Again, I spoke last week about how we will only be reading off the list during the last episode of each month now, and this is not it, so no list today, but the last episode of this month will be episode 5, which covers Sauce Money and Nelly. And again, we will be implementing a new list this season of the top 3 female artists so far, so definitely some exciting things to look forward to in the near future. Again, these lists are all in writing on the Tale of the Tapes Facebook page. If you're interested, the Facebook page is www.facebook.com/Tale of the Tapes Podcast. You can just give that page a like and follow to stay up to date and interact with the podcast, give ideas and predictions, etc. You can also give the host website a visit at www.anchor.fm/Tale of the Tapes. Both of those links are spelled completely normally. On the host website, you'll see a support button. Anything is greatly appreciated. And that's it for today's episode, which was a relatively uneventful one. And that's not to shit on either of these artists, but not everyone can have a miraculous finish. And with that coupled with the changes to the podcast, I'm sure there will be more episodes like this going forward. But for people that are either fans of these particular artists or clueless but possibly curious about them, I think it was a pretty solid episode. Next week on episode 3, we'll be covering Drag On and Brother Ali. And these two are definitely polar opposites in more ways than one, so it'll be interesting to see who bests the other. Until next week, Tale of the Tapes. Peace.
Tale of the Tapes.